As much as I like to fight everyone, I'm having a pretty good time here. Why you mad? Why you mad? Why you mad?
Hey, Louisa, what's up?
Hi, Jake. How you doing?
I'm good. I just got back from Texas. I had a weird impromptu last-minute trip to Texas. It was real weird. I feel weird.
It was weird to look at your pictures and stuff. It seemed like a weird, like, high school reunion kind of trip. You know, like, you're, like, meeting up with friends and doing weird pictures. But it seemed cool, and I'm glad we have... let's just introduce our guest right away. We have comedian extraordinaire Chris Cupis. Welcome to Why You Mad?
Hey. What's going on? I was part of that high school reunion trip for a night.
Yeah, that's what I want to hear. What did you guys do? And I am interested to hear. I know we've talked about what's going on in Austin. I've certainly talked about, jokingly, what I think is going to happen.
Well, let me tell you. Let me kind of put this in focus and where my
I want to hear both of your perspectives because, I mean, for people who listen to the show, we should give this background, which is people know Jake came from Austin to New York. Yeah. But Chris, if for anyone who doesn't know, is still in Austin. He's a big comic there who has been probably, how many years have you been there?
A decade?
Yeah.
A little over at this point, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So you're seeing on the ground the what's going on over there?
Well, I mean, yes and no in that, like, I didn't want to kill myself for anyone else for the last year, so I didn't do comedy.
Mm-hmm.
A fair amount of people.
When you and I hung out, it was like the first time you left the fucking house, right?
Yeah, well, so I did one show back. So I got vaccinated. I'm like a month past my second shot. So I've done exactly one show since last of March. I did a show at Spider House. But other than that, when we hung out, we had like, that was us. We went to had dinner on a patio. Like we were like doing, like it was our first time kind of like doing shit, you know?
Yeah.
Which was definitely tight. And if it was going to be with anybody, but you and Blake and a bunch of fucking miscreants, so it was kind of perfect.
Yeah.
Aw, you saw Blake too?
Yeah, he was weird. He's just rolling through town with painted fingernails and shit.
Hanging out in his members-only jacket, doing all kind of Blake shit.
But so, for me, like, going back to Austin's always weird because it's like a time travel-y thing where Austin is moving at a certain rate and I'm gone and then I come back and it's just like shit's changed. And most of it is like, I was talking to somebody about this, about how, like, you come back, and then there's, like, this new generation of people, and everyone's very resistant to them and, like, hates them. And then you come back, like, a year later, and they're just in it. They're just part of it.
And everyone's
like,
you're all friends with those people.
Oh,
yeah,
Nick Savarino, I love that guy, you know? And you're like, but then there's, like, a new generation that those people are all collectively together, kind of like, oh, no, not this. And it just keeps going, and you're kind of an idiot if you don't realize that it's just a constantly moving soap opera. Like, it's, like, seasons of Degrassi kind of thing or whatever.
Yeah, and I'm the Drake of this comedy scene.
And
I'm mostly sitting down as often as possible.
And that's all true of every scene, though, I would say. You know?
No, that's what was so weird about it, is because you don't feel that as much when you're in it. But when you are, like, out of a scene but just poking back into it on, like, a timeline every now and then, it puts it way more in perspective. And so it was giving me this huge, like, weird existential crisis where I was just like, what is this? This is just comedy is just this perpetuating, like, cast of people or whatever. But then I got over it because, like, so basically, whenever I'm in a situation like that, whenever I go back to town, I go, you know what? I'm just going to hang out with the people I like, which are the people that I started kind of doing comedy and shit with, which is me, you, and Blake and our fucking friends or whatever. So that was a pretty fun hang. I had a pretty good time.
Got a little, you know, a little smashed as one, as you like to do in this town, too many shots. But like, but then also like, there's a thing that you say like, yeah, you know, there's the new group and I'm too old to hate new people for being new. You know what I'm saying? But also there is like, I'm not trying to start comedy war because I don't know any of these fucking people. Like I said, I didn't do comedy for a year. So the people that have been doing comedy, I don't know them. They might be funny. I don't fucking know. They might be cool. I don't fucking know. But there is a little bit of like, well, hey, man, like, give it a minute. What, like, I know you're like big right now because you're doing comedy and that's awesome. I'm happy for you. I'm glad you've kept the scene going. I'm glad there's venues for people to come back to do comedy at. But like, people are going to come back to do comedy. And, like, they, I think, are also resistant of the people who took a year off. You know what I'm right. saying? The yeah. people that yeah. did to try to be responsible with shit. I think there's people that are resistant both ways. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, let's talk about what you did, like, during your pandemic year. Because I think I've always kind of been fascinated about you. Is it you're like a movie guy in that you've seen, like, every movie, like, worked at the movie theater type guy?
Did that for a while, yeah. And then this year, well, I've been lucky to, like, work from home through this whole pandemic. So I just watch movies while I work all day. Yeah. So I'll go through... 3 movies a day sometimes, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, I've watched like fucking 300 movies in the last year.
God damn.
Give or take.
That's amazing. I like that you tweeted it because I kind of did that. I especially caught up in a lot of stuff. That's what we talk a lot on the podcast is that I see movies that like everybody has seen and I'm like, oh,
yeah,
I missed
that
because I was in grad school. Yeah.
I tried to fill in a lot of those holes for sure. Like there was a lot of like, oh, I definitely should have seen The French Connection by now. So like I watched that. They do stuff like that.
But I wish that I had done some kind of, I did start a Letterboxd, right? Yeah. Do you have one of those?
I do, but I haven't like, too I'm much bad work, about right? commenting.
Yeah,
I always make a note to like just more for me to like. Yeah. Okay, I watched this movie. I added to the list.
Yeah.
But my Letterboxd is basically just a running tally of what I see.
Well, that's what I started to do to just use it as a running tally. But then it was like complicated, and it was like another site to check, and I got fucking notifications, and I was like, I don't give a shit. And it literally. So then I like stopped. Like I started putting the movies in, and it was when I was watching all the Saws. So then you just see.
Like, I watched every Saw this year. Back at Halloween, I watched all the Saws. Yeah. All right. 3, 2, count of 3, 3, 2, uh-huh. 1, go. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Oh shit! Okay.
For the series as a whole.
Okay.
Oh, the series as a whole.
Yeah, okay. Series as a whole. We'll go 3, 2, 1. Did you like Saw? Do you not like Saw?
Okay. Right?
And I'll narrate.
Okay. Well, I was gonna say thumbs up. I know it's an audio visual. Well, hold on. Yeah. I was gonna say what I was gonna say.
Yeah.
3, 2, 1. Thumbs down. Thumbs up. That's just terrible. That's one of the worst goddamn series. It makes no sense.
Listen, right before that, I watched all the Final Destinations.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And are you thumbs up on that one?
So I kind of like those 3, 2, 1. Yeah, yeah. We got a 3, 2, 1. 3, 2, 1. Thumbs up.
Halfway.
I think Saw would have been better if they did what Final Destination did. I think what makes Saw a mess is them trying to tie all of it into a thing.
Yeah.
And trying to have this continuing story from one thing and make all the characters relate because they're terrible and stupid and it doesn't work. If they just made each one of those movies, a new movie, a new cast of people, they get killed in interesting ways or whatever, I could watch 100 of them, but that's not true.
I really like the ideological tying in of like we're trying to figure out why this dude is doing this and then later we're like sympathizing it. Like it's really bad and stupid, but I like them for what they are. So I say overall I like it, but I'm not.
You know who's terrible at it? Did you watch Gilmore Girls?
No.
Okay, so Luke from Gilmore Girls, who's like the main male lead in Gilmore Girls, is a cop in one or two of those movies.
I know that guy. Yeah. Toupee.
I'm sorry. Like, I hated fucking Saw. I watched all of Saws. I watched all of the Child's Plays. I watched all of the Halloween. I watched them like October.
In October, we watched I watched all of the Die Hards.
Oh, nice.
We talked about it on here. We've been doing Copaganda. Well,
I watched a lot. Okay, I will talk about cop shit because I have a bunch of.
I actually had a friend came over to visit me to hang out in the backyard, and he was like, you know, we've been friends for like 20 years or something, and he was like, dude, did you hear? You know, there's like a new Law and Order, and I was like, of course, and I gave him the download on the new Law and Order, and he was like, man, that's really crazy. You have been like obsessed with cop shows for like the whole time that I've known you. And I'm like, it's very important. This is like very important in our culture. Like,
question.
I don't know.
Tell us about the new Law and Order because I know there's a new one. I think they brought back Stabler, right?
Detective Stapler is his name.
Yeah.
Say Detective Stapler?
Detective Stapler, yes.
Stapler. Yeah. I'm assuming he hits people with
Stapler with the good butt. Yeah, he
pulls out his gun and he thinks it's a stapler.
It's funny now that he's known for his butt because, like, I watched Oz back in the day.
Yeah.
And he was very much known for his dick. Yeah. He was way more dick famous back in the day. And now, flip it around a little bit.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, and he's always been hot. And what I think is really awesome about him actually as a person is that he's like actually a comedic actor, and that was what he wanted to do. And what he's in a Hot American Summer.
Yeah.
You know, like, and also Harold and Kumar. Do you guys remember him in Harold and Kumar?
He is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's like a redneck in the woods that wants them to fuck his wife or something. Like,
is this
like a
Christopher Maloney?
Yes.
That's him.
Yeah, he's exactly. also in Happy. Yeah. He's really good.
Yes, and in Happy. Exactly, exactly. So he, I think those are the things he would prefer to do, and that's why he left Law & Order SVU, you mm-hmm. know? Because he left, like, probably like 10 years ago, I think.
Yeah,
more. And in the show, they just wrote it as, like, Stabler quit, right? Like, something terrible happened. I think he shot a kid. That's what it was. See, he's terrible. So, like, here's the thing. We have to go into the background, which is that Stabler... is probably our like the last three generations like favorite cop on TV in America, right? Because he was a sex crimes cop, right? So he's like a sexy man who spends his whole time using all his alpha male energy to beat up child molesters, to track down the rapist and the like abusing husband and that kind of stuff. And he breaks all the rules, right? He fucking like every rule, searches, shits without warrant, beating up perps, fucking getting his family out of trouble when they fucking break the law. Every fucking rule that you can think of, covering for cops. But the whole time, and this is what's crazy, is that I think people don't realize when I say copaganda, it matters and it goes into your brain. This is the example. So you sit there being like, I love Stabler, because you're learning this idea that like, if the cop is a good person, then it's okay that they're the ones deciding when to break the law and when to break the rules. Right. Because if they do it for a good purpose, then the means are justified by the end, right? But this is precisely copaganda, because it's inculcating in you the idea that cops should have the ability to make these decisions and be like work in a gray area.
Right. Copaganda does this interesting thing, especially with like shit like Law and Order that's like really, really, really long form, and you just watch it like every day of your life or whatever, where if you've seen a million episodes of a story where the cops are, you know, have to make certain decisions, you've like kind of moved the goalposts into how you even think about this, because there's all these assumptions that you're making to begin with, which are that like, well, the cops exist and they're good and that the yada yada yada, and then all the like malleability and like the where you can manipulate stuff is like just a very small part of the picture. Like, like if you've seen them, like the premise of Law and Order basically is that the cops are a good institution that protects us from like, you know, these bad evil things or whatever, and that is never called into question in an episode of Law and Order. So just watching that 9 million times just hammers like the thing that is already assumed to be true at the beginning of it, and it does have a side effect which is weird and does sort of like kind of have an underlying bad effect on people's psyches. But what I think is really interesting about this, so I want to take this back to something that happened when I was in Texas when we were hanging out at that bar.
Can I jump in real quick?
Go ahead.
Just make one statement about what we're talking about, and then we'll come back through.
Totally.
And that is, I think everything you are saying is all correct, except only if you're stupid. Because, Louisa, you've watched 1,000 fucking episodes of Law & Order for 20 years, and you're fucking ACAB all day, right?
Yeah.
Like, totally. I watch every shitty cop show on the planet. I watch Bosch, who's a whole character. It's just a guy that breaks the... It's a cop... It's like every... It's the cop show your dad would like. I watch all that horseshit.
Yeah.
And never trusted a cop a day in my fucking life.
Totally.
Yeah. Like, I think all that cop shit it does work on dumber people.
No, but you know what? I totally agree with you, but like, to be kinder, let's say, and get at the problem, I don't even think it's on dumb people. I think that it depends on your relationship with media and art, right?
Okay.
And like, for my part, and I think Jake's part, our relationship with media and art is critical. We internalize it through criticizing it and through like having a critical approach to it. To me, it sounds like you are a person who has a like healthy distance between yourself and who Chris is and what you consume as media and art, not being like part of your identity, and like you don't internalize it in that way. The problem is that a lot of Americans, I would say the majority, they internalize media through this subjectivity of like, I want it to be uncritical. I want it to be like, I turn off my brain after work. I want to just laugh at this and not think about why it makes me angry if somebody points out that I enjoy something that's problematic. You know what I mean? Like, they that's their relationship with media, is to self-soothe, and therefore they uncritically like absorb a lot of these narratives.
There, I think there are three ways to interact with media, and so I want to get back to this question, this thing we were talking about right before. We had like an interesting philosophical conversation going before we got drunk as fuck, and then just went into a hurricane. But we were talking at the beginning before the sun went down about. I know you, the reason y'all asked me this is because I'm on Twitter and I'm insane and I'm constantly yelling about shit on Twitter. Somebody was like, hey Jake, like, can you ever turn it off? Like, do you ever, like, are you like this? And I thought it was a really interesting question. One, because I know why you think this. It's because the thing that represents me on the internet is cranked up to 11 all day, which is not an accurate representation of what I'm doing all day, but I still, like, it's still a lot. And also, you know, there is this question of, can you, like people see, especially what people do online, and especially when it's angry, and they feel for you, I think, and they go, like, I hope you can not be like this and not be frustrated, because some parts of life are, like, why play Mario Kart for a day, you know, just fuck off and hang out, or, like, watch movies or something like that. And I think it's really interesting, because I actually don't feel, like, that pissed off when I'm watching movies or when I'm engaging with media and stuff like that, because I think I have this thing that Luisa was talking about where it's like critical, and like I don't think you can turn it off in the way that you can't unlearn English. Like, once you have like kind of things that look and shape things, and you know, they're fundamental to the way that you look and think about things, you can't turn them off. But it's not really, it doesn't bother me. Like, I'm able to sort of like think about the events of the day and the movie that came out that week or whatever, and the TV show, and I can't not really see like the truth in it or what I think is going on, but that is very enjoyable for me. And I think that's weird, that's interesting, because there are people that I think that does not sound fun, and so they propose, instead of having like an actively political mind, like a passively political mind. And I say this because most people, when they argue with me about this shit, an hour later, we're talking about something that happened, like a police shooting or something, and they have an opinion on it. And I'm like, okay, well, like, this is political and you have an opinion on it. So wouldn't it be better to be like actively thinking about this stuff than just like, oh, this came up and I just have to think about it or whatever. So that's kind of where my mind's at. But then I do think like that. But then the third thing you could do is to have this thing that I think you have, where you're just like able to completely, like you were just describing, of like being able to watch a million hours of propaganda and have it not have an effect on you at all, because it's like a completely separate thing.
I think it's important to recognize that, like, I recognize the problematic nature of those things that I watch, right?
Yeah.
I understand that Bosch being the hero of Bosch is bad, because he is just like, it's like people that watched The Shield and like thought he was the good guy. I don't know if you guys ever watched The Shield.
Yeah.
Already. All right. So it's about an actively bad.
I watched
cop.
All the cop shows except Bosch, actually.
Oh, it's pretty great. You should watch it. Okay, Revolver, it's pretty great. Okay. Marlo from The Wire, really, it's pretty good.
Love
but
it.
Like, so like The Shield is a show about an actively crooked cop. The protagonist of the show murders a fellow cop in the first episode. He is bad from Jump Street, but every once in a while he does something. He uses his bad for what is the greater good or whatever, right? And there are people that watch that show and go, oh, what a great hero. I can watch that show and go, oh, this show fucking rules. That was awesome.
Yeah.
He's the worst piece on the planet. Like, you can have...
Totally.
You can still enjoy... I think there's a weird way to enjoy the thing, almost even in the way they intend me to enjoy it, while still being able to go, oh, but this is also bullshit.
Look,
like, you know what I mean?
And to be honest with you, the critical framework is also enjoyable. Like, my whole life, I have had people, like, to me now it's like a joke, but my whole life I've had people be like, oh, let people enjoy things. Can't you just have fun? Don't you know how to just enjoy something? And I'm like, no, this is me enjoying it. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Like, I watch Law and Order, and then I'm there, like, I recognize this is supposed to be the cop seems like a hero, and I'm there like screaming, no, don't let him in, don't let him in your house. I know this guy's a rapist, but like technically I don't know that yet. So like, we don't know that, we can't just side with the fucking cops. So check this out. So to go back to Law and Order, because Law and Order, like, if I were an academic, I would write a fucking huge thing about Law and Order because
it's also
a franchise that's existed for so long, you guys.
30 years? Like, 30 years.
Yeah. And it has, so its impact and its reach, not just to like the people that watch it, but like to all the other cop shows that came out after it and all of that shit. Yeah. And the way that it internally changed is crazy. And I think I maybe said this before in the show, so I'm just going to say it quickly. But like Law and Order, the original one, was like a true procedural, meaning that every episode was like a different case, right? Mm-hmm. And there's like no connection of previous people and criminals or any of that. Every day we open up to a new crime, and then the first half of the episode is the cops investigate the crime, right. And the second half is the lawyers take it to trial, right? And it's like evenly split, and they, it's not glamorized, you get me? Like they, sometimes the lawyers lost, even though everybody knows this guy is the murderer, you know? Sometimes the cops fucked up and didn't, you know, like didn't do Miranda right, so they had to let the person go. Like they covered all of these different versions of what happens in the legal system.
Right.
And then SVU came next. And with SVU, they switched into, and SVU is the most popular one. Mm. It's the biggest one.
It's weird.
And it switched, yeah, it's really weird. It's a spinoff that's more famous, like, you know, bigger than its original.
Yeah.
Sure.
And
I think it's going to be for the reasons you're about to say, which is
they made it about the cops.
Yeah, exactly.
So they made it about hero figures so that it became personal stories and like the relationships of the cops with each other and their relationship with like their idea of like being heroes, of being like it's their responsibility to save women and save fucking New York City and like all that shit, right? So people fucking loved it. They ate it up. America loves heroes. Then they made Criminal Intent, which was the one with Vincent D'Onofrio.
Right.
And that one went after something that became very popular a few years ago, like the true crime, serial killer, intellectual murder kind of shit, you know? Mm. So it became this like, ooh, we have a heady detective who gets into like one-on-one eye-locking fucking interview anger with the murderers, you know, and he can think like them and whatever, that kind of bullshit. So that lasted like 6 years and that went away. And then the next fad, now, it's crazy because the next one is called Law and Order Organized Crime, okay? And it is bad, my friends. And what it is like...
Bad as in like it's a bad show or bad as in it's like really propaganda?
No, it's not a good show.
Okay.
And as far as propaganda, I don't even think it's going to be successful. Like, I don't think it's going to be unsuccessful propaganda because it missed its time. Because check out what they're doing. So they did an episode of SVU. They did the crossover thing where in an episode of SVU, Stabler comes back.
Right.
And then something happens, and now we're going to finish it in the first episode of this new series. Right? So this is what's crazy, you guys. So we just all talked about what kind of cop Stabler is and why people love him, right? But we are now in times of Black Lives Matter and fucking social unrest and people trying to hold cops accountable and all this shit. And even before this episode, SVU had been doing episodes about, like, dude, they had an episode where Ice-T was the guy that arrested a black guy at a crime scene who was, like, not related to the crime. So Ice-T got taken to court for being racist. So they had like the black cop represent NYPD racism.
It's
fucking crazy, dude. So they've been having a lot of these episodes dealing with reforming the police and with like having to connect with communities more and think about how policing needs to change and apologize for the things they used to do. And fucking here comes Stabler. He comes back and he's like literally the opposite of what we're trying to make cops now.
Stabler, exactly.
And they do this whole scene where...
His experience is weird? He's like me with Austin. When you leave and come back, and you're like...
Pop back in.
On a different trajectory or whatever.
And so then Olivia is like, hey, yo, you know, you gotta be cool because, like, we're not... Like, shit's not like how it used to be, you know? And then he's like, yeah, of course, I'm not like that anymore. So they have to have this whole scene where he's like... Basically recognizing that the way that he used to be a police officer was bad and he's not like that anymore and he learned so much. And so they have to do this whole like whitewashing of the type of cop he was before they can introduce the next thing that he was doing. And then, you know what happens? So the premise is that he's in New York to visit Olivia or to go to some award because Olivia is the captain now. So she's getting some kind of fucking award.
Sure.
So he went with his wife to New York for this award show. And then... when they're like leaving the hotel to get in the car to go to the awards show, his wife goes to the car first to unlock it, and the car blows up. Uh-huh. And so some mafia dudes were trying to blow up Stabler, and they kill his wife. So they did the very cheap thing of like, when a character has something to make up for, then we have to take something away from him to make him sympathetic again.
Now we also now have to justify how he's gonna go beat the shit out of
the Italian
guy.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Sure. So now, boom, we're in the next show. The next show is called Law and Order Organized Crime. And really, you guys, it should be called Law and Order Sopranos because it is like 10 years too late in what it's trying to do and make this whole thing about like organized crime being like the hot shit right now.
Yeah,
and
but it's so not. No one cares. Not. The only cool thing that happened to the only cool thing that happened to the mob in the last 10 years is that QAnon guy shot John Gotti.
Totally, I'm like,
not Gotti, but who was it? Like, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. No, like literally, the fucking good thing about The Sopranos, or what made it interesting, is that the man himself was questioning whether mob life was something to do. And these dudes, 10 years later, are like, you know what people want? Fucking a cop and mob guy drama. So it gets worse. So it turns out, it's like not even a procedural anymore, you guys. It's just a drama because now Stabler is the head of an organized crime unit in New York. And he is just single-mindedly focused on getting the guy that killed his wife, who is Dylan McDermott, like another big name. Part of the cast. So now a criminal is part of the cast. First time ever in Law and Order history. And I watched 3 episodes so far. And it's all related to just... It's just that drama between them. So it's no longer about police procedure or like different crimes every week.
Right.
But I think it's going to fail because there's nothing to connect. Like even the propaganda is not there because they're not sure how to make him a hero, you know?
And it's also not what people tune into Law and Order for.
Yeah.
Like as someone who has watched Law and Order for a couple of decades at this point, like that's not it. Even like SVU, like you said, is kind of far removed from the original Law and Order, but at least that is like a new case ripped from the from the headlines. They gotta solve a thing. My favorite thing, this is a completely tangent, but my favorite thing on any Law and Order is when they have to have a rapper character. They always have to name a rapper. They always gotta name the rapper that's like, they like, oh, Killer Bags or whatever. Yeah. $3 signs. It's my favorite. Yeah.
No, and the best thing about those are like when they go to see a DJ to like interrogate him or whatever. And you know how like anytime they go to talk to a person who's working, the person like doesn't stop working. You know, they'll be like, oh, man, I kind of saw him. And they like keep loading the boxes. Like you wouldn't stop what you're fucking doing because cops are at your job talking to you. Like, what the fuck?
The Mulaney bit.
Oh, is that a Mulaney? I know people have talked about this, but it's so
guy
funny.
Guy who won't stop unloading boxes from a truck.
Exactly.
To talk
so I did
to
just
the
totally...
murder police or however the fuck he talks.
Yes, exactly. And but when it's a DJ or a rapper, and they like go into the studio, you know, they're just like they keep fiddling with the knobs, playing with the record. I'm like, this is so dumb. This is so dumb.
Can I tell you about another real terrible propaganda show I'm watching? I've watched every episode of for 3 seasons, and it's maybe the worst of all of them.
Is it the Rookie?
It's 100% the Rookie. Because first off, they cast Nathan Fillion, who is the like most charming fucking person on the planet, so you can't hate his beautiful baby face. And then this episode, I watched the most recent one, they bring up the MOVE bombing in Philadelphia. Yes. Like, they are trying so hard to do that thing you were saying about, like, oh, we have to address racial issues.
No,
and try
listen,
to, whatever,
to be honest with you,
it's so funny.
It is, that show, I talked to Jake about it before in an episode here, so, like, we don't totally have to get into it, but that show, if somebody were to ask me, like, which show represents, like, the cutting edge of what cop shows are doing right now, it is The Rookie.
Okay.
Because they are like every episode deals with police reform and like police ethics and race stuff, and I'm not saying it's a good thing because it's still, it's basically actually doing a new form of propaganda, which is pushing the reform idea, pushing the idea that they are bad apples and that we can fix them.
Right.
By having like Jake right now, the current arc, check this out. So the current arc is that the rookie guy, who's like a 40-year-old cop who decided to become a cop when he was like 40-something, he did something last season in the line of duty that made it so that he couldn't graduate. So he's still a rookie. And if that happens in your first year, I guess that means you'll never become detective. Like if you don't pass police academy. I was like, you know, police school. What do you call that?
Police school.
The first time.
Cop Hogwarts.
Yeah, then you can pass it a second or third time and become a like a uniform beat officer, but you won't have any hope of becoming a detective.
Of like advancing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So then this dude's boss tells him, who's a black man, tells him like, hey, I think you're a good cop, right? Like you're what should be cops. So what if you go back to school and you get your degree, then you can become a TO, a training officer, and you can teach cops how to be good cops. And, you know, like, because they've had episodes where they've had bad training officers that then, like, somebody had to, like, they had to work together to catch him being racist and doing horrible shit so that they could get rid of him. So now, in this season, there's an arc where Nathan Fillion is going to night school and shit to, like, learn cop shit, right? And, like, yeah. get his degree. And he has a black woman professor of criminology or law or some shit who is an activist, who is a like a abolitionist, basically. Mm-hmm. And so she has this class where they like sit and have academic discussions about like, yeah.
And it's him and like and eight other like 20-year-olds are just going like, fuck you, cop. And he's just being like, oh, shucks, I'm just trying to be good.
Yeah, like, exactly. He's like, I recognize there's some problems, but there's some of us who really want to help.
It's bad. And I watch every episode.
Me too. It's fucking fantastic. But that's what I'm saying is that in a world where something like The Rookie is being made, Law and Order Organized Crime like feels like from 2007 when you watch it. Does not make sense for what you're doing right now, but
well, because the very premise of the genre is being challenged by what's happening in the world that it is like reflective of, so there's like it just gets more and more absurd the less a show keeps up with that sort of stuff, which is why Law and Order is so weird, because it's existed for so long that the reality in the first season and the reality in the current season are like incompatible with each other, and the writing is all just getting the characters from that point to like this point. So you can't really go back to the old tropes, which is kind of why, you know, in some ways, you know, like during like the Black Lives Matter uprisings and stuff last year, the internet dorks were like, you know,
you can't watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Well, there was this other thing happening where like, okay, like, there's, like, a famous Malcolm X quote about this, and sure, it's important to, like, keep this in mind and stuff, but, like, one thing that was happening is people were, like, burning down police stations, and then, like, Hollywood was responding by going, okay, we've considered what you're doing, we're gonna change this character on our show, and everyone's going, that's not what we asked for, but it's still not bad, I don't think, because all the dummies that watch these shows now have to watch a version of it that is more up to date.
That is forcing them to think about these things
and,
a little.
And, I guess I'm kind of like, also, and this is from talking to a lot of different people that are maybe not as smart as the three of us, wink, wink.
Mm-hmm.
But like, even with us, though.
About Blake?
No. this is, I don't even want to. But,
don't say it. I'm just kidding.
I have a question, though, about this. Mm-hmm. Even let's go even for that with us. We don't think propaganda works on us, right? But that is not how propaganda works. Like, you're not aware that something is working on
you. Exactly.
So how much stuff does work on us that we don't know? Because I was talking to people, and it's like they can't see the outer parameters of the arguments that they're making, which is the whole fucking problem. And you know, I would have people in Texas just be like, oh, yeah, it's racist. Everyone down here is so racist, you know, except for, but I'm not. And it's like, I vote Democrat, and I'm all these fucking things that are like signifiers for not racism. And they start talking about the police, and they're like, well, what are you going to do? You have to have police, you know?
Yeah,
and you go, well, that's a racist institution.
Yeah.
If you believe it has to exist, that means you don't know the history of it, and it means that something is causing you to feel that it is a reality that has to happen. And that is how racism is mostly occurs in the world, is for people who think they think they're not doing it. They just
and you know what I think is a more insidious version, and more, particularly in the argument of people that are maybe consider themselves more progressive, but still can't get to an abolitionist mindset. Mm-hmm. Podcasts, fucking true crime ladies podcast, and I don't mean that shittily. I listen to all of them.
No, totally.
I really do.
Yeah.
But they have convinced a progressive or quote unquote progressive white lady who would like vote for Obama and do the right stuff, that there is a fucking rapist outside every window, and there is. But if
and
you
that, don't, and that there are good cops. And,
yes,
you also highlight the cop who caught someone.
Yeah, they all fanboy whoever from the fucking Discovery Channel show.
And if they're good looking, oh my god, then they go off into like, look at hot, sexy detective, blah blah blah.
And I think it's more insidious because I think it's something where like even I did. I'm guilty of the previous thing of going like, oh, the cop shows, they only work on stupid people, smart, whatever. And like, it's more of a base type of entertainment that like the masses, whatever. But podcasts have convinced people to think like, oh, this is more of like an intellectual pursuit or medium or whatever. And it's just as dangerous, if not more so.
Yeah.
Ha! Take that, Karen Kilgariff. I'm kidding. I love it. I'm not even being shitty. I like Karen is awesome. I think it's very, very funny.
No, I love true crime too, but I think that it's
podcast. But I
yeah, and I listen to every episode of that fucking podcast. I'm not above any. That's the thing. I'm not above any of the criticisms I'm giving. I'm just.
But
I am
above
them.
I don't think they are either. I think they have heard some of it, and they must struggle.
Yeah, they understand. I get, but also like.
But you know what I would tell you is where it gets me, or where I try to be aware. Because here's the thing, like. It can get in you, but I think that the very fact that you're like aware that you're taking a poison makes it poisonous to you. I don't know. I don't know if maybe that's just like magical thinking on my
part. I get what you're saying.
But the part that I do worry about is like, okay, so if for 20, 30 years I've been watching all these cop shows, I'm part of the cycle that tells all of the system that this is what America wants to watch.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Uh-huh. So I do think about the fact that while I'm watching this, I guess ironically or for research purposes and enjoying something that was not intended, I am still part of the audience that tunes in for this and therefore drives TV writers and TV makers to make more.
To continue
of this.
To make that.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I see how the I'm participating in this like narrative being spread. But to go back, Jake, to your point about like, you know, oh, so TV writers start to change stuff and like that's not what we wanted, but maybe it's like a good thing.
Chris D'Elia. Are we
the
talking
rookie.
About Chris D'Elia?
No.
You see he got taken out of that movie?
No, which one?
Oh, this is wild. So he's supposed to be in Army of the Dead. They filmed the whole fucking thing, and then they had to digitally take him out of the movie and replace him with Tig Notaro.
No, that is crazy.
Man. That's 100%. If you look at fucking... also, I'm making this up. I'm pretty fucking certain
that's
I read
so
this. Let's
funny.
Find out. Army of Dead.
Find out.
Zack Snyder explains replacing Chris D'Elia with Tig Notaro in his upcoming movie.
That's so funny. I wonder if they did a Law and Order about Chris D'Elia.
At the time, it was also revealed she would shoot her scenes in front of a green screen alongside an acting partner, and then they edited it back into the movie.
That's great. I was going to tell you guys, I don't want to get myself in trouble because I love my job, capitalism, but it is pretty funny. At my job, part of the work is like reviewing all of the content that the media company I work for owns and like flagging it for content flags. And if it doesn't seem like something we would want to put up now, we want to take it down.
Sure.
There's one series that it features a lot of stand-up comedians that literally like every day we take down an episode because the note comes back. That it's like, this episode has two rapists in it. This episode has one person accused of sexual harassment. This person has one person accused of fucking a child. This, and they're like, great. Comedy's doing great. Comedy's doing great.
I will ask you off air.
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
What are you talking about?
Oh, Chris, I think you've been on it.
Could be.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
That's the only clue that I will leave there. We can talk about it later. But your episodes have not been flagged, so don't worry. I think you're fine. So about The Rookie, this is what I wanted to bring up.
Because
actually, in the episode that we did that we talked full in length about The Rookie, I think we ran out of time or I got too drunk and I didn't make my last big point, which is what Jake just made. The point Jake just made about how shit changes in society and then like the writers try to change how they're doing their show, but that doesn't equal material change, right?
Yeah.
But part of what we talk about every single episode is the fact that like ideological and narrative and rhetorical change very often is needed to precede material change, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Rookie is the perfect example of this process because they literally, from the beginning, Jake, they have been doing this thing of they are trying very hard. Those writers are trying very hard to figure out how to write cops as likable people while also exploring all of the flaws of policing in the system, although with like obviously with a reform intent, not ever even approaching the idea that abolition is possible, right?
Yeah.
But the whole show has been filmed in this way where, like, the cast is of all different races. There are women cops. They've had trans people. They like, have community organizers. Like, it's, like, class conscious. It fucking it crosses, like, all of it. Race, police, everything. And then you find out that, do you remember, Chris, that in season one there was a different black lady cop?
Yeah, didn't she get, left the show, like, in reality.
In reality, she left the show, check this out, because during the filming of season one, she kept having to go to the producers about harassment issues, right? Yeah. Including things like the hair and makeup people making racist comments about having to match her skin or deal with her hair. About another actor, which was never identified who it was on set, making comments to her that were like misogynist and racist. And she kept going to the producers, which includes Nathan Fillion, and they like didn't address it at all. They didn't help her in any way. And then when season two started, they just fired her and replaced her with another black woman. So while like forward facing, they're being like, oh, we're going to try to change the world and address all these fucking discrepancies of like race and class and gender and all this shit and like how police can actually help society get better. Backstage, they're being fire the troublesome black woman that doesn't like it when we make fun of her hair. Wow. It's fucking terrible. And so it's like, I struggle a lot with it because I do think narratives are important and the media we make is why I think the jokes you guys make matter and all of that stuff. But then if there is this disconnect between what you're presenting publicly and then what you're doing privately, that's the schism I think we need to resolve both on an individual basis and on a social basis.
I think what's really kind of in question is like, what is the order in which these things all change and then lag behind each other or whatever? Because it sounds like material change happens first and then that forces like rhetorical TV shows to have to change because they're reflective of the world we live in.
Yeah.
So, like, if you abolish the police, the next season of Law and Order would have to be fucking canceled. I don't know, or just like
private detectives or whatever.
Abolition is not like the hammer comes down and they're all gone. Okay. It's like this weird down thing or whatever. They would have to then be about
all the
like
cop
that.
Shows can become.
They'd have to address that.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but this is a hot tip. All the hot shows can then. I mean, all the cop shows can then become the Equalizer.
have not gotten around to the Equalizer.
Listen, I'm not going to tell you it's great, but I love Queen Latifah. Right?
I love Queen Latifah as well. But the first time I saw her zip up on that motorcycle, commercial,
it's so funny, like, dude. And just wait, and her outfits are amazing because they're still like rapper outfits. It's really funny. But Jake, the premise of this one, did either of you see the movie The Equalizer?
I saw the movie. I know the old. There's a show from the. I'm old.
Oh
movie,
right.
So there's a show from the 80s that this is based on. All this is based on.
Yes.
With
okay.
Edward Woodward.
Yes. So the premise of it, Jake, is that she is a former cop. She was a like CIA, whatever, fucking high level cop, right? Like international cop. And then the company fucks her over and she realizes that they fucking suck and they're terrible. So she quits. But she realizes people out there still need somebody to help them. So she off books, you know, like not working agency, not working for any government, and like subverting local police and the CIA and everything goes out
vigilante
of her way.
Vigilante
justice. Yeah. Exactly.
She's going to help people that can't go to the cops.
So I think that would be the future of police dramas. They would have to all turn into vigilante dramas.
Well, maybe vigilantes, you know, but the other thing is like, realistically, like, just to get into what abolition even is, you know, the reason that there are so many, like, bad comedian takes on it of, like, what the, you just, are you saying it should be this crazy reality or whatever?
You're
is like
going to let the murderers walk around?
They don't understand, right? I figured it out today. I think it's a very simple way to explain this is that no one understands where the police came from. And that's the first thing you have to understand is we just, we're hanging out here and then there's a group of people that we sort of formed to be slave catchers. And, like, the Texas State Troopers, you know what they come from? They were specifically formed to intimidate Mexicans away from moving into Texas and running for office and shit like that as Texas is being formed. So this group of people, the racist brigade, Avengers of fucking racist bullshit town is around, and then as society starts to develop, we develop new things that we need a government worker to do. We go, well, we need someone to regulate highways and shit like that. Like, we already have this racist group of gang members.
Let's have them do it, right?
And that's where we get all the fucking problems we have, right? And so that's why with all these situations, the thing that we're saying when we talk about abolition isn't like no one's going to be around to do it, because it's not...
It just should not be these militarized...
It's insane that we just have this thing that is evil, and we're like, well, that's who operates government, right?
So you saw with... I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just as an example, because also I read a thread from the Black Socialists today that made me feel bad about what we do, because... they're really awesome. You should follow the Black Socialists if you don't. But like, they made this thread about how, quote unquote, any leftist out there, if all you do is like criticize the system and the status quo and point out the problems, but you never offer solutions and you don't work towards all of them, then you're not actually helping anything. And I kind of disagree, because I do think it's part of this changing the rhetoric and changing the narrative thing. So talking about it does make a difference. But it has inspired me to try to have more conversations about the solutions and all that, because I am often very dismissive, like read a book, figure it out, you know, and I'm like, okay, let's talk to people. And one of the things with everything happening this week of Black people getting shot basically in traffic stops, you know, which is not just this week, it's for like all of American history since there's been cars. There's been a lot of clear conversation about what the alternative is. And it's pretty fucking obvious, which is the people stopping people to give them traffic tickets, why do you have a gun? Why do you need a gun? So the obvious solution is just like there's like a parking meter or what is it, a meter maid brigade who just goes around giving tickets to people whose meters expired. There can be a traffic brigade whose only job is to approach cars and try to give them a citation for the violation.
Sure.
And then they can escalate and call to an armed guard if there is some reason for them needing protection.
Right.
As opposed to, I'm automatically going to pull you out of your car with a gun to your head. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it just is crazy to me that people don't, like, the knee-jerk reaction of just being like, well, if you don't want this, what's, like, provide a solution.
Yeah.
That, I don't think, is a fair way to look at the world. Like, I don't know. You can't just be like, well, you pointed out a problem, give me a solution. How about you think about the problem? Maybe you can contribute a solution. And like,
there's a difference between recognizing that something is bad and automatically knowing how to fix that problem. Like, if I see a leak under my sink, I can go, oh, there's a leak, but I'm not a plumber. I don't know how to fix the leak. Like, both, but also someone needs to point out the fucking leak. So like, you know what I mean? Like, the pointing out the problem isn't in of itself an important and fucking
step.
Reasonable act.
I think it's just sometimes not the end of the process. People in media.
Well, it's kind of the end of my process.
Me too.
So I'm going to point out the problem, and then other people will figure out the solution, and then I'll.
I think
especially us in like comedy, like I feel like people in like media and especially in comedy often feel a little guilty because we chose a fun job. Like, we sought this out because it's a fun thing to do. And it feels like, well, wouldn't everyone just want to do this one part of the fucking process and not do the other part, the finding the solutions and stuff like that? But I also don't think that's true. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people, and most people, I feel like I'm glad that I chose like to pursue being a comedian, because I do think it's pretty easy, and I do think a lot of people could do it, but I think most people are terrified too.
Yeah.
And a lot of people like that I talk to in political stuff are like, they're very happy doing some other shit that I find completely terrifying and boring.
Yeah.
And the division of labor is just like kind of a natural tendency within human communities and stuff like that. So we should probably like, we worked very hard to get where we are. We should sit and enjoy the fact that our job right now is kind of fun, and it's something that feels good. And it's, you know, it's to fucking point, it's to be critical and point shit out. On a mass scale that we built out from doing stand-up and shit like that.
I mean, okay, but you guys are comedians. You are public figures. I mean, I don't know. Somebody was trying to tell me that I'm a public figure now because of this podcast. And I'm like, no, don't say that.
We should do a Patreon tier when we get enough listeners. That's when Louisa is officially a public figure.
Right now I'm still a private figure. Thank you so much. So you guys, I do. That's why I love comedy and comedians, because I actually think, believe it or not, this is where I'm going to put a pressure on you guys, because, you know, comics, especially in the last few years, I've heard a lot of like comics hating the idea of whenever somebody frames comics as philosophers or like, you know, just like makes you seem important, I think is what people are against. But I genuinely do think that the first seed of dissent in any society is humor. Like the very first way that we automatically are like, oh, I don't like this, is to make a joke about it. And very often in societies, the first place that you can track when somebody expressed a dissenting opinion is through a joke or is through art. You know what I mean? So I do think it matters because you do this thing of like seeding the ideas on other people who have those other skills of I will come up with a solution and I will change it and I will do this other thing. But that also means the bad side, which is if you are the type of comic that's like pandering to alt-right shit and whatever, you're planting the seeds and ideas into the brains of doers who are going out and be like, I'm going to start a militia. You know, I'm like, I'm going to fucking start Proud Boys. And like, whatever. And you're like, what the fuck is happening? I don't understand. But I guess for me personally, like, as an anthropologist, which I, every time I say that, I'm like, I sound like an asshole. But like, because of my training was very much just to observe and not get involved. And that's always been my approach. So I make commentary, but I don't get involved. But in the last couple of years, I do feel a guilt about like, I should do more, right? Like, Chris, you do this, is it called Red Rice and Beans?
Red Beans and Rice.
Red Beans. Boston. That's what I meant. Red Beans and Rice. Sorry. Yeah. Already a little tipsy. Yeah, where you like collect and provide
food. Yeah, we make free meals for people.
Yeah. That's awesome. Mutual aid. Yeah, exactly. Mutual
aid. That's the stuff.
Exactly. And I do it, you know, monetarily. I'm involved in stuff like that, but I feel like I should do more. But even like, okay, so I am starting a comedy show in May. It's like a month away. But I literally have been struggling with the fact that, like, I have enjoyed not producing comedy shows this last year. It's been really great for my life, for my mental health, like, my life, work-life balance. It's been amazing. It's really great. And I've genuinely had to think about, like, do I really want to do this? Do I want to get back into doing shows and all the problems that that brings? And do you guys know what the reason is that I absolutely am going to do it? What? It's a very petty reason.
No, I like pettiness.
Okay, thank you. Please embrace it. Because the petty reason is simply that I'm the kind of person that is like, I talk mad shit and I prefer to do it from atop my horse. So if I'm going to tell comedy people that they run shows badly and their lineups suck and they don't pay people, then I do feel like I have to run a good show where I pay everybody and everybody wants to do it, so then I can continue to talk mad shit.
you know, like,
literally I'm like, oh, let me prove to you that I could do the thing that I'm telling you suck for not doing. Let me do that. So I'm trying to bring that attitude to other parts of my life and get involved. But one of the things that I, you know, obviously because of my background, I'm very passionate about, that sounds so corny, but you know, I'm very concerned with immigration stuff as a, what is it, first generation American. So I've
fresh
been trying
off
to find
the
out,
boat.
Yeah, fresh off the boat, exactly. I'm trying, you know, like had undocumented parents and shit like that, you know. And then I've been trying to figure out a way to help, because I speak English fluently, I want to help people like translate their immigration documents. And so I've been searching for like a group that I could work with, because I speak a couple languages, I can help different immigrants, you know. But every group that I find is through a church, you guys.
That's not a surprise. And I get you, because I am very not
I'm not religious, but they're doing good work in some cases.
Yeah, but so that's the thing. You kind of have to figure out, and I feel you, but you have to figure out, like, can you find another group that isn't affiliated with the church? Then fine, but that's hard. So is it, does it?
Well, what I'm going to try.
Can you put your ego aside a little bit? Is it worth doing that? And not even ego, but sort of
it
like...
Is, no, it is ego. It's totally intellectual ego. Of being like, church. I don't want to be associated with
I don't want to be associated with religious people either, but if they are the bridge that allows you to then actually help
some
the people that need it, I don't know. It's a shitty place to be in, for sure.
I'm trying to
treat it
out.
Like a good cop TV show. Like, you actively know.
That's a good point. Okay, so this is what I'm going to try next, is somebody pointed out that I can reach out to law firms that do immigration.
That makes sense.
And volunteer to help their clients with their paperwork. Because
that makes sense.
They wouldn't have to charge their lawyer fees or whatever, I can help them for those hours. So I'm going to try that. So if anybody listening runs a law firm and has immigration clients that need help with like translating forms, I'm very good at bureaucracy.
And that's got to be something you can do over like Zoom and shit.
Yeah,
it doesn't
totally.
Even need to be in New York, right?
No, over Zoom, and I can just in your language be like, okay, what's your mother's maiden name? And type it in for you. Yeah.
We are assuming a technology barrier there, but
Let's talk about the question this has all been leading to, which is is King Kong versus Godzilla propaganda?
So have you've seen the new one?
I saw half of it, and then my fucking cable went out or whatever.
Did you make it to Mecha Godzilla?
Yes, that was right when the Roku broke or whatever the fuck.
I would argue that Mecha Godzilla is Blackwater.
Okay.
Godzilla is like corporate policing.
Chris, you're so right, because this is what I was going to say. It's not propaganda, but it is capitalist propaganda.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because it is very much about a world where, like, technocrats run shit and have the money to do this crazy shit of I'm going to move this giant monster.
The protagonist is like an outsider podcaster. It's a tech movie. I didn't fucking realize this. Because the thing that threw me off when I was watching it is that there's this big battle, like, on, like, a battleship. Like, there's a bunch of battleships out in the water. And Godzilla and King Kong are just, like, picking up the ships hitting each other with them, and I'm like, this is cool, but you don't usually see this in movies because usually movies are military propaganda. And I was like, are they gonna use one of the ships to like resolve the situation? And then the answer was like, no. And I was like, cool, like, good, just break all that shit. But
what
was
crazy to me is that I think I got drunk during this and I forgot about half of it, but
you're supposed to,
what happened that at the end. Godzilla and King Kong.
Spoilers, by the way.
They're
unite.
Like, cool. Yeah, they unite. They help each other.
Mechagodzilla.
Yeah, exactly. So there's this whole thing where, like, even as the humans continue to be, I don't know, like fucking capitalists who have their other goals for why they even caused this situation, you know, these monsters end up, you know what I mean? Like, the monsters end up having better ethics than the people involved.
Agreed. And the capitalists end up being the bad guys.
Yeah.
Interestingly, because their creation goes astray and starts wrecking the city or whatever, and our two outsider podcast hosts, Godzilla and King Kong, have to unite against their corporate overlord, Mechagodzilla, in order to save the proletariat.
Yeah.
I think Godzilla versus King Kong, been watched critically.
Nicely done.
Leftist propaganda.
Totally. I'm going to add another
watching
thing.
Watching Zizek.
Which will connect to what we're going to talk about in our Patreon episode. But like, so you remember they had the mom and the daughter? There was like a scientist and the native daughter. So like, that's a perfect pairing for our current social climbing, right? So it's like a woman environmental scientist who adopted
a deaf mute native
orphan
indigenous
native
person.
Exactly.
Who's indigenous to like
some
King
fucked up
Kong?
Weird island? But they're technically the heroes of the movie, right? Because they're the only
Skull
ones that
island.
Had pure intentions from the beginning. They wanted to help Kong, and then later they're the ones that could communicate with Kong and like get the whole thing working.
Exactly.
Which leads to the modern propaganda of like individual voices can change things, and like as opposed to looking at systemic problems, you know what I mean? Which is our problem. Like our creation of heroes is this whole thing of like we think that we're just waiting for one in Jesus figure to come fix us, and like we all individually can fix the world, but never is that fixing framed in the sense of the way you fix it is by destroying the system.
Yeah, you know? It's weird. You know, something I can't stop thinking about is I heard Kim Stanley Robinson say in an interview, he said the novel is a bourgeois form. And like, what he meant by that is like the advent of just storytelling in a certain way that's been around for like a few hundred years now is we take it for granted that a story is like about a dozen people involved with each other, and the results of the story have to do with people's individual choices and stuff like that. And so even when we have like social change that is for the better, like say in this hypothetical I was doing, like what if police abolition happens and then fucking all these TV shows have to catch up to that universe, they're still spoon feeding us the concepts of the how we got to the reality that we live in through it was this one cool person who then made a bunch of good decisions and they fought the bad guy and then that happened, which is weird because it's not true, but it's so fucking fun to watch that shit over and over and over like every goddamn movie, you know?
Yeah.
If the novel is a bourgeois form, then explain Jack Reacher, sir. I've read 30 of those books.
Hey man, listen, I read a Dan Brown book. It's pretty good.
Yeah, they're all
Danny Brown.
That Dan Brown.
Danny Brown wrote a book.
Danny Brown's book is great.
Dan Brown.
Read Danny Brown's novels. They're fantastic.
And Dan Brown is the Da Vinci Code guy.
Yeah, oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like religious mystery murder.
it's National Treasure with Jesus.
Yeah. Exactly. It's fantastic. It's perfect. Why? Well, but this is how propaganda and shit like this would be good if we recognize it to be like ridiculous, but it's just like fun to think of this person trying to fix this problem. But instead, we're just like looking for heroes who fix things for us. It's very weird.
It's weird. You know, I don't think most people, like, I'm not going to be a complete cynic about this and be like, most people are just dumb as rocks and they're watching TV box and they're going like, yeah, I love this guy. Like, most people understand themselves to have a healthy enough detachment of it. I think the lack of something, like the lack of like sort of a critical lens or some sort of context to put this in is just why this stuff naturally seeps in. Like, if you just never read anything about the police and then suddenly these questions come about, like, what should we do about them? The only thing you have to reach for is this mountain of information.
Framework is Law and Order.
Yeah. It's not like the media's fault. Like, I don't think it's good to be somebody who's like, we gotta stop them from making all this. It doesn't fucking matter. It's gonna naturally occur, and it's also fun to watch, and it's not like, other than maybe making the argument, like, oh, you shouldn't support this or whatever, but like, no, I think it's fine for us to kind of live in this like cynical space where we understand that this stuff is like bubble gum. Like, it's like junk food or whatever. It's fun to watch.
To add to that cynical space, let me do a rare defense of TV writers.
Okay,
right now,
hot take.
I know. Which is that ultimately, Jake, they are in a weird position, which is that you are hired because you're creative, meaning like you probably have like groundbreaking ideas about fiction or narrative or how you do your work. But your job, because of capitalism, is to sell as much as possible. So they exist in this world where whatever ideas they have, like let's say the writers of The Rookie, maybe there are abolitionists on that writing staff, you know, who like really are pushing forward this, like, we have to have conversations with like community leaders and not just have like one-sided decisions by cops and shit like that, you know what I mean? But they have to like temper their extremism to make it relatable, so they end up producing this like very liberal version of their ideals, you know what I mean? Because I know leftist TV writers. I know that this fucking drivel you put out is not your ideology.
Well, me too. And when I yell at them on the internet, it's not the point I'm trying to make is not, hey, you should stand up and fall on your sword and get fired from your show. It's that you shouldn't, like, because it's the second thing. It's usually the person is then trying to convince me, no, what I'm doing actually is like working on the thing from the inside or whatever. It's like, be real with me. You got a job. We all understand that we have to do the jobs that we got and that they come with limitations. But I guess it's like when someone's trying to convince me that they don't have the limitation and that they didn't make a deal with the devil on some level, the reason that pisses me off so much is that rationalization.
You're lying to me and yourself.
Yeah, and that rationalization causes worse things to happen. So if I got a TV writing job right now, I would do it and I would feel very like aware of what it was and like, you know, kind of keep that in mind. And I think that's a better way to go about it than just like turning around and going,
can I tell you something? I would watch the shit out of a cop drama written by you two.
Oh,
would be hilarious.
Literally Jake and the Fat Man.
Yeah.
Don't like it.
So,
I would love it.
Oh, man. That would be badass. One of the cops has just a ridiculous movie trivia knowledge that does not help at all in solving the crimes.
Never helps. Just constantly referencing.
I'm sorry to break this to you guys. That already existed. It's called NCIS. Your grandmother watches it. It's on CBS. And one of the agents, all he does is movie references.
Really?
Yeah, he's a NCIS. Do you know what NCIS is, first of all? No,
it's,
right?
There's like eight of them, though, right? Isn't there like a New Orleans? And
New
a
Orleans. Yeah, there's a couple. But NCIS, like the acronym, agency it is, that's why it's like the most ridiculous show on TV. Okay. A cop show. It is the Navy Criminal Investigation Service or whatever.
That's insane.
Basically, whenever there's a crime involving like sailors, like a sailor got murdered, or a sailor murdered somebody.
There's enough of that for like three different television shows.
Television shows that have been going on for like 15 years. Ow. And so literally every single episode is like,
is every sailor in it?
A sailor got murdered.
LL Cool J is in it. I know that much, right?
Isn't LL Cool J's in the New Orleans.
Oh, his hat is like a shark's fin. He killed someone.
No, he's
turned into a shark.
Basically the water.
Yeah, and then the New Orleans one is the guy from, what's that 80s show where he would jump from time to time?
Quantum Leap.
There you go.
Quantum Leap! Yeah, it's the Quantum Leap guy.
That's Scott Bakula?
Scott Bakula. Yeah, he's the main investigator, so he works for the Navy, investigating Navy crimes. In New Orleans.
That's so stupid.
It's so bad, you guys. You have no idea. It's terrible.
Wilder Valderrama is in an NCIS.
Yes.
I just Googled
it. Wow.
Yes. No, it is literally CBS's top ranking show.
Sure.
What?
But it's also CBS's
Old people love it.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. I don't think they're watching this shit critically.
I know, they're not.
No,
they're
but
not
they're also barely watching it. Like, your grandma's putting on NCIS, and it's just on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I don't
even
know what, like, she's absorbing it either. Like, does propaganda work if you can't hear them? Like,
I think it does, because they're like, he seems like such a handsome young man.
Sure. That's
cops are good.
Yeah. I think those people just shouldn't be allowed to vote. They should be allowed to watch as much propaganda as they want.
Yeah.
And then not vote.
But no driving,
we should let them
no
vote.
Voting.
We just give them one of them little boxes. But it doesn't actually, it's not connected to anything. It's like, you know what I'm saying? It's like a remote with no batteries in it. But they get to push the button, it's fine.
Yeah.
Totally. Like the closed sticker door button and shit. On elevators.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, this has been fun. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you for coming on, Chris. Nice talking with you.
Yeah, it's a good time.
One last question. What's the best movie you watched in the entire last year?
Yeah.
Ooh, fuck. That is a hard one. Because, I did watch, 300 movies since the beginning of the pandemic.
I asked because I didn't, and I just wanted you do the work for me.
Yeah.
I want to watch something.
Wait, is it White Chicks?
No.
I didn't make it to White Chicks.
Have you not seen White Chicks?
Yeah, no, I haven't seen White Chicks.
Louisa, maybe do an episode about it.
Maybe we do a watch along for White Chicks.
I think White Chicks is one of the greatest movies ever created. It's like historically important. Do you know that it's the first time ever that black people did whiteface on film?
I didn't know that. I still don't want to watch it. Okay? Like, it still looks real bad.
It's great!
There's a couple movies that I really liked. I really liked, I'm trying to think what I've seen recently. I like Judas and the Black Messiah a lot. I just finally got around to watching that.
That's
there's
good.
A movie I watched called Tigers Are Not Afraid,
whoa,
which is a Mexican movie that's kind of a little bit horror, a little bit fantasy about these, like, street orphans.
Cool.
It's really, really good. Oh, and I watched Taking It to Pelham 1-2-3, which I hadn't seen in a long time.
I like it. I like that.
That's a good-ass New York movie.
Yeah, it's totally good.
Yeah.
I've been watching, so what I do is I pick, an actor, and I try to watch all these movies.
I did a bunch of that. I did that more, directory. I watched a bunch of De Palma, over 2 days.
I don't know shit about directors.
I hadn't seen.
I watched all the Wesley Snipes movies.
All of them? Because there's some fucking bad ones in that
all
run.
All of them, I know.
Murder at 1600?
Murder at 1600 is great. Shut up.
No, it's not.
It's so
not.
Good. It's
U.S.
So good.
Marshals? No,
also
it's
also great.
Not.
Also great. You
Boiling
know
Point? You
hold on.
Boiling Point?
U.S. Marshals is great because it is a sequel
to
The
Fugitive,
which is
bad.
Awesome. No, it's great. Shut up. It's fantastic.
You watch Blade?
We're going to watch a spin-off. We're gonna,
all the
there's
Blades.
A spin-off podcast where we just watch all the Wesley Snipes movies.
Yes, and we argue about where he's great.
What's up, Wesley
acting.
Heads? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Snipe. Sniping.
Snipers. Wesley Snipers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was in the, what was it? Coming to America.
Reboot. Yeah. No, he's come back and been good. He was good in Coming to America, and he was good in the fucking the Dolomite movie. I can't think of the name.
Dolomite. Yeah. He was amazing. And My Name is Dolomite. Yeah.
I'm at Chris Cubis on all social media. I'm plugging shit because you didn't ask me if I wanted to. And my podcast is Bad Advice with Chris Cubis. You guys have both been on.
What a professional. I love it.
Check it out on Fridays.
Great podcast. Listen to it. I think you guys will love it. Jake, you want to plug anything? What are you doing?
Yeah, I listen to Pod Damn America. And I think that's all I got to plug for now. I don't have any stand-up coming up. Listen to my episode of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast.
Oh, yeah. It's good.
I just did that. It was cool. Good.
I am going to have a show starting in May, which is going to be live in New York City at a venue that I'm not going to disclose yet. But also, we will be live streaming it. So it'll be the kind of show that people everywhere can see for half the price as the door people. So it'll be fun. So follow the show at Casual Sets NYC.
Ooh.
And then you'll get more information. Do you like the name? I sourced it from Twitter. I literally was just like, somebody name my show. And then a bunch of people replied. And I was like, I like this one.
It's a pretty good one.
That works for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to go with that. Casual Sets. And it's in a good big room in Manhattan. More info to come. But
it's in Madison Square Garden. They closed down during the pandemic.
Yeah, exactly. It's big enough where, yes, you will be socially distanced. I checked all the stuff. It's going to be safe. So I'm excited. We'll see. And if it sucks, I will quit after four shows.
Nice.
I'm just kidding. I do that a lot. I start shows and then I'm like, okay, now it's yours. Bye. Like, great. But not with this one. I think I'm telling you, I'm really going to try, you know, like instead of doing a free show, I'm trying to do a good show that's like paying everybody that is safe COVID wise, trying to live my words instead of.
There you go.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
You love it.
Yeah.
All right, that's the damn podcast. Thank you.
Bye, y'all.